The Scope for Financial Alchemy, an Evaluation of the Experiment. In evaluating my approach, we must distinguish between its ability to produce profits in financial markets and its ability to predict the future course of events. The fact that the distinction is necessary has far-reaching implications. My financial success stands in stark contrast with my ability to forecast events. In this context, we must distinguish between events in financial markets and events in the real world. Events in financial markets determine financial success. Events in the real world are relevant only in evaluating the scientific merit of my approach. Even in predicting financial markets, my record is less than impressive. The best that can be said for it is that my theoretical framework enables me to understand the significance of events as they unfold, although the record is less than spotless. One would expect a successful method to yield firm predictions. But all my forecasts are extremely tentative and subject to constant revision in the light of market developments. Occasionally, I develop some conviction, and when I do, the payoff can be substantial. But even then, there is never present danger that the course of events fails to correspond to my expectations. My approach works not by making valid predictions, but by allowing me to correct false ones. With regard to events in the real world, my record is downright dismal. The outstanding feature of my predictions is that I keep on expecting developments that do not materialize. How can financial success and predictive failure be reconciled? That is the question I shall address in this chapter. But before I do so, I must remind the reader why it arises in the first place. My decision-making process was greatly influenced by personal factors, such as my presence or absence from the office. The fact that the monetary results served as a possible criterion of the validity of my ideas made me try harder than I would have otherwise. This is borne out by the fact that my understanding was much hazier and my moves in the market more tentative during the control period than they were at the height of the experiment. Such haziness is quite common. It is the sharp focus that I managed to attain in the course of the experiment that is rather exceptional. I was greatly helped by the discipline of having to write down my thoughts. My arguments may not strike the reader as particularly well organized, but they are certainly more consistent than they would have been if I had not taken the trouble to formulate them in writing. I was also inspired by the fact that I was able to combine the two great abiding interests in my life: philosophical speculation and speculation in financial markets. Both seemed to benefit from the combination. Together, they engaged me more than either one on its own. The other consideration has to do with external events. For instance, I recall the time, in 1981-82, when the Federal Reserve sought to control the quantity of money and allowed market forces to set interest rates. The market for government bonds, and to a lesser extent for stocks and currencies, became like a casino, and my approach of formulating hypotheses and testing them against the market became worse than useless. By the time I recognized a market trend and formulated a hypothesis to explain it, the trend had already changed, and I had to find a new hypothesis. The result was that I was always lagging behind the market and kept on getting whipsawed until I abandoned the hopeless struggle and delegated the task of gambling in government bond futures to someone more qualified. I found a computer-based speculator, Victor Niederhofer, who had developed a system using the assumption that the market is a casino. He operated successfully until the international debt crisis of 1982 changed the nature of the game. He had the rare fortitude to close the account before he had lost all the money he had made for me previously. I could argue that an approach which allows me to recognize when it does not work is a valid approach. Still, it is somehow more convincing to demonstrate it at a juncture when it does work. These two considerations go a long way toward explaining my financial success. I have never claimed scientific status for my theoretical framework. On the contrary, I have argued that reflexive processes cannot be predicted by scientific method, and the real-time experiment was a deliberate attempt to explore an alternative method. To bring the point home, I have described the alternative method as alchemy. Scientific method seeks to understand things as they are, while alchemy seeks to bring about a desired state of affairs. To put it another way, the primary objective of science is the truth, that of alchemy, operational success. In the sphere of natural phenomena, there is no distinction between the two objectives. Nature obeys laws that operate independently of whether they are understood or not. The only way man can bend nature to his will is by understanding and applying these laws. That is why alchemy has failed and natural science reigns supreme. But social phenomena are different. They have thinking participants. Events do not obey laws that operate independently of what anybody thinks. On the contrary, the participant's thinking is an integral part of the subject matter. This creates an opening for alchemy that was absent in the sphere of natural science. Operational success can be achieved without attaining scientific knowledge. By the same token, scientific method is rendered just as ineffectual in dealing with social events as alchemy was in altering the character of natural substances. My approach is more successful in dealing with financial markets than with the real world. The reason for it readily suggests itself. Financial markets themselves function imperfectly as a mechanism for predicting events in the real world. There is always a divergence between prevailing expectations and the actual course of events. Financial success depends on the ability to anticipate prevailing expectations and not real-world developments. But as we have seen, my approach rarely produces firm predictions, even about the future course of financial markets. It is only a framework for understanding the course of events as they unfold. If it has any validity, it is because the theoretical framework corresponds to the way that financial markets operate. That means that the markets themselves can be viewed as formulating hypotheses about the future and then submitting them to the test of the actual course of events. The hypotheses that survive the test are reinforced. Those that fail are discarded. The main difference between me and the markets is that markets seem to engage in a process of trial and error without the participants fully understanding what is going on, while I do it consciously. Presumably, that is why I can do better than the market. If this view is correct, financial markets bear a curious resemblance to scientific method. Both involve the testing of hypotheses. But there is a fundamental difference. In science, testing serves to establish the truth. In financial markets, the criterion is operational success. In contradistinction with natural science, the two criteria do not coincide. How could they? Market prices always express a prevailing bias, whereas natural science works with an objective criterion. Scientific theories are judged by the facts. Financial decisions are judged by the distorted views of the participants. Instead of scientific method, financial markets embody the method of alchemy. This interpretation of financial markets as a mechanism for testing hypotheses by alchemy is both novel and challenging. The fact that it is not generally accepted adds to the challenge. How can markets be testing something when the participants don't know what they are doing? The answer is to be found in the results they achieve. Try to propound an unformulated hypothesis and you get a hit-or-miss result. By contrast, when you deliberately formulate your hypotheses, you can consistently outperform the market averages, provided your specific predictions are not too far off the mark. Treating the market as a mechanism for testing hypotheses seems to be an effective hypothesis. It produces results that are better than a random walk. This conclusion validates the approach I have taken over a strictly scientific one. If we abide by the methods of natural science, we arrive at the random walk theory. The hypotheses that are being tested have to be disregarded because they do not constitute facts, and what we are left with is a jumble of haphazard price fluctuations. On the other hand, if we look at the situation from the inside, from the vantage point of a participant, we discover a process of trial and error. It is not easy to make sense of the process. Many people participate only with a vague idea of what is going on, and I must confess that the sensation of being on a random walk is not unfamiliar to me. My attempts at formulating conjectures about the future work only intermittently. Oftentimes, all I get is white noise. But when I succeed in formulating a worthwhile conjecture, the results can be very rewarding.